Right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things football in Portugal. And for this very special show, we've got the full squad assembled. We've got Barney, Kevin and Andrew all on the show. Barney, it's been a little while, but it's good to have you back on. How have you been feeling about the beginning of the season in general?
I'm enjoying it. Yeah, it's been good so far. I'm adjusting to the new numbers on the back of the kit. I think okay. I just like the old ones. It just throws me off a bit. It feels like it's a slightly different league.
It's like when you watch a team play in Europe and they use a whole different lettering system and you think it's just not right.
It has thrown me a little bit, but otherwise not. It's been good. I'm still not like, still a lot of players to catch up on and work out, particularly Alves, as we'll talk about in a bit. But it's been a good season so far.
It has been good. Kevin and Julia, obviously, there's a very big game that we're going to talk about. Let's wait for just a second. We'll just, introduce you guys as normal. Andrew, I mean, you're in Portugal today. Do you want to tell us a bit about that? It sounds like you're going to have a great time. You've got a Super Bowl in hand.
Yeah. Coming at you live from Portugal where, the skies are blue and it's sunny out here. The skies blue are still over the Dragão after the great performance.
Couldn't resist.
I couldn't. Start early. But in Portugal, nice little trip away, and I'm hoping to see some games while I'm out here. But yeah, we'll see.
Andrew, are you loyal to Superbok, or do you ever dip into the Sagres?
It's Superbok or nothing for me. I've got to say, Sagres is not my type of beer.
Well, there goes that sponsorship, but never mind. All right. Well,
unless you sponsor us, then it's the only beer.
I mean, at one point, me and Barney were really gunning for the Coral sponsorship, but that one sadly never came to fruition.
Decent beer, Coral.
We are available for sponsorship. Should anybody wish to get in touch, please do so. But gents, let's not waste any more time. Of course, there was a huge game this weekend. We didn't have to wait very long at all for the first Clásico of the season as Sporting and Porto played each other on just game week 4. And it was all set up very nicely. Both teams winning their previous 3 league games. Both teams impressing us with a very high level of performance in those league games. And I think it's fair to say we were treated to a very good performance overall in this match. At times it was end-to-end, attacking football from both teams, and at times both teams showing real bravery and desire to make their impact on the game, which I think made for a very enjoyable Clásico. Of course, only one team could win, and it was Porto who came out on top. They were able to score 2 second-half goals in quite a short space of time to earn themselves a valuable advantage. They did have to hold on slightly as Sporting got back into the game, but it did end 2-1 to Porto, who take the first crown of the Clásico of the season. Goals from Luke de Jong and a goal of the season contender from William Gomes made the difference. Listen, Andrew, I'm sure you must be very pleased.
I am indeed. It was a great game between the two best teams in the country, without a doubt. And you could tell the atmosphere leading up to the game, and even in the stadium, everyone knew it was a really important game, even this early on. From a Porto perspective, you're playing the champions away. You're still without Samu, who he was on the bench, but clearly not fit enough to start. Pepe is still out, and then we lose Gabri Veiga. He had a back pain, and he he didn't make the trip. But you could feel the tension. And as the game started, then in under a minute, there's that chance from Borja Sainz, the overhead kick hits the post, and then, you're off to the races at that point, and the tone is set for the game. I thought the first half was pretty even. I think they both had some good chances. There was a really big Pedro Gonçalves chance, which a player of his quality, I've got to say, I couldn't believe it. When Luis Suarez passed it to him, I was like literally screaming at my TV. And he must have heard me because he wasn't able to put it away. But I think that could have changed the complexion of the game. Second half, we started better and we were rewarded. We saw Luke de Jong's first goal for the club. And then a few minutes later, like you said, William Gomes, who I thought had a difficult first half, but he scored another goal of the season contender to go with the one he scored last week as well. But Sporting later on started chasing the game. Obviously, they pulled one back. and they turned up the pressure. They generated some good chances, but we were equal to it. And I think Diogo Costa was especially equal to it, especially that last save, that is sort of like 85th, 86th minute from that Luis Suarez shot. Fantastic save. And, you know, if that goes in, then it's a completely different game. So, yeah, he was really good. Albert Costa with another great performance with his fourth assist of the season so far, which is very impressive. He's a player that's really hit the ground running since arriving. Nuno Pérez, you know, he had an action-packed performance. Yeah, he scored an own goal, okay, but he seemed to be involved in every tackle, every interception. We got to see the two Moras get their first start of the season. Rodrigo Mora, you know, coming in for Gabri Veiga. He stood out just because he plays that position differently to Gabri Veiga. He plays it in a more attacking, sort of taking on your man kind of way. Excuse me. And I think he was trying to create as many opportunities for himself as possible, particularly that really lovely individual run where he beats like three players and takes the shot. And it was great to see from a player who's had so many question marks hanging over him leading up to the game. And I think that performance will go a long way to showing Farioli that, you know, he can trust Rodrigo Mora. My weekly Alan Varela mention, another great performance. You know, his ability to now pass through the lines, it's an aspect of his game which has improved so much. He's getting a lot more sort of progressive passes in, and he seems more confident overall. I already mentioned Luke de Jong. He delivered a real striker's performance. You know, he used his experience to just make a nuisance of himself, and he did what all great striker should do. You know, he anticipated and trusted his teammate to get the ball to him, and he did, and then he got his goal. And then I think keeping Pedro Gonçalves and Trincão quiet was really important in this game. And it's Trincão, obviously, it's now another game where he's struggling a bit, but he still had some chances, and he's still Francisco Trincão. He can sort of make something out of nothing. He took a few shots himself. Then we saw the first look at Pablo Rosario since arriving. 10 minutes for Samu, a rare Dennis Gull sighting as well. But it was the first big test for Porto this season. And despite the close score, I think this is a statement win against a more than worthy opponent, showing that this Porto team have what it takes to challenge for the title. As for Sporting, I'm not going to analyze them too much. Kevin will tell us exactly what they got right and what they got wrong. But what we'll say is, I don't think this loss will define them, because we've seen how good they are. And it's not like this was some one-sided performance where they got flattened. But in what looks like a season where every point could count, I think this will hurt for sure.
Yeah, and I think that is a very fair point. That it was not a performance where I think any team was you know particularly dreadful or there was one clear winner. Although I think the interesting thing about this game was if you kind of showed this match out of context to a neutral football fan, I think, and you asked which team was kind of the favourite to win the league, I think the kind of confidence and positivity that Porto showed in the game was what almost impressed me more than anything else. You know, this was a team that went into this game with a mindset of absolutely that they felt that they were the favorites to win and that they knew that if they played at their best, they had the players to hurt Sporting and that they were going into this game to go out and win it themselves, not to kind of try and stay in it or to try and not lose against the reigning champions, which I mean, I know that sounds almost a little bit patronizing or damning with faint praise, but you know, perhaps for people who've watched the league, we might still have that hangover of last season, still thinking about Porto as the kind of underdogs slightly compared to Sporting as the reigning champions. But I think if any neutral viewer watched this game out of context, like I said, I think they would have looked at Porto as the team who really were the team almost with the most confidence, which I think was quite indicative of how what Farioli has got out of this team in such a short space of time and
Yeah,
particularly
it's credit
commendable.
to him. Yeah, it's credit to him because if you look at this group of players, it's a lot of new players, but they look like they've been playing together for a long time, and that's not easy to do. And that's, you know, that's really good coaching and you know, just getting the right players to do the right things as well.
The other element of that as well that I've really took from this game was like it felt like there was a bit less bite. Do you know what I mean? And I was really thinking about the team and like how there is a lot of new faces coming from other leagues into this team. Not a huge overhaul, but there's a lot of different players coming in, and of course Farioli as well. But I felt that the lack of like we've seen games like this before between these two, and it's been carnage, right? And emotion has really taken hold, particularly for me, my best like memory is Porto, it feels like. And I felt like the fact that that was taken out, it just didn't seem to. I know we had the incident where the lighter got thrown at Sanusi in the celebrations, and but even then, like it that didn't sort of translate back onto the pitch afterwards. It just felt, and I think I came away thinking that this was quite like, as you sort of both alluded to, like it was impressive how this Porto team were together, quite calm, playing some good football in patches. I don't know if you agree, Andrew, but I felt that I just feel like, yeah, it's. And I guess this is what Andrew Fierce-Burgess is trying to do, right? It's a new Porto. It's this is like this is a this is a different Porto to what we've seen in the past few years.
Yeah, that's sort of, I mean, there wasn't enough sort of yellow cards for random assistant managers and all this kind of stuff that we're used to seeing in these kind of big games, and even, not the big games. But yeah, it didn't have that kind of bite, but I think this was because these are two very good teams, and I don't, and neither of these teams has to rely on any of those kind of tricks or, quote unquote dark arts or whatever you want to call it. And they're both two teams that wanted to go toe to toe with each other, and that's what they did, and that's why it was such an entertaining game and a real sort of great advert for the league in general, where you see two teams that really put on great performances.
Yeah, I think that's.
Sorry, go out.
Yeah, no, I was just going to agree with what you said, to be honest, Barney, which is that I think it's a great point. And while it had the intensity, and I think it had, like, neither team lacked any passion, it was how that kind of passion and how that intensity was manifested on the pitch. And we weren't bogged down by the antics that we've seen before. And maybe that's because it's an interesting point, actually, Barney. Maybe that it's because of the kind of the players on the pitch, and we don't have a Pep on the pitch. We don't have an Otamendi on the pitch, obviously not for doesn't play for those teams, but those kind of senior figures who perhaps are burdened by that kind of legacy, maybe you can say. And even on the bench, although I think there was still one red card on the bench, we have to acknowledge it,
At
but
least one, at least one,
at least one. But no, I think it is a really good point that it wasn't a classic coach we've seen so many times descend into antics and negativity. And there was the incident with William Gomes and the celebration and the Sporting fans. Maybe this is a controversial thing to say. Kind of don't mind it. A little bit of back and forward. It's okay as long as it's kind of contained and it doesn't escalate too much. We don't want to lose that bite completely. Excuse me. We don't want to lose that bite completely
Albert,
from.
just to point out, Samuel, I think, is the one that got the yellow card. He was giving a bit to the fans after the goal. And look, as a Sporting representative here, I'm going to come in early and just say I do not mind that at all. I think that is completely healthy. If anyone has been keeping up with the building works that has been happening in Alvalade, it doesn't have that gap between the stand and the pitch now. Look, it's good for the celebrations for the home team and the away team. It happens.
It works both ways.
If you don't have a bit of bite in these games, then it's not a derby. It's not a rivalry. This is
Absolutely.
completely normal.
Yeah, and we need it, and it's what makes Portuguese football what it is. But I think, like I said, it's so many times, particularly with the kind of members of the staff on the bench in the past, we've seen it kind of just go overboard. Kev, I will bring you in here because I know we've been quite Porto heavy. We do want to get your perspective as well. Obviously, as a Sporting fan, there's no way to sugarcoat it. There's no kind of sitting there going, oh, I don't mind losing to Porto. It is what it is. There will always be that disappointment to lose any big game, to lose against any title rival. There are, of course, some silver linings, perhaps maybe from neutral perspective, not from the Sporting's perspective, but that it wasn't a terrible performance. There were obviously negatives. Perhaps on another day, if that William Gomes goal doesn't go into the top corner, you walk away with a draw. We shake hands and say, fair enough. But look, it was what it was. But yeah, I'm interested to get your perspective on the game.
I think overall, if we're being objective about it, it was relatively even. I don't think we can say that either side was necessarily really superior, but at the end of the day, Porto are the ones with, if we look at their current situation, looking at last season, they should have had less expectation, but they were the team that came forward, who played with a real intense, played the game at their own style, seemed more comfortable in all moments of the match, in my opinion. While Rui Borges' sides, I have to say, especially near the end of the game, where you do expect Sporting to really put on the afterburners, to really
ramp up the pressure at times, they looked like they lacked a bit of composure. It looked like Porto were a little bit more comfortable. And I apply this to even, I'm going to use the fullbacks as the example in this, just because I think that Albert Costa's performance really sums up what was the difference in this game. He looked comfortable defending. I mean, Pedro Gonçalves in that chance that Andrew mentioned, it's criminal that in a 3v1, Albert Costa can even get back and make that challenge, block the ball. It's a credit to him, but it's also very, very poor. And Sporting have had moments in this season where they haven't defined very well, in moments where they have more players than compared to their position. And these are the sorts of moments that, whether we want to mention it or not, Gyökeres would usually get that goal and really not leave any margin for a doubt. So I think that is slightly worrying. While Albert Costa was good defensively, he got his goal contribution. You had a lot of question marks looking at Sporting's fullbacks. Fresneda was not at all comfortable in possession. Mangas playing deeper is not comfortable at all, and he doesn't seem very capable against higher opposition to really have that moment of inspiration, unless he's in mountains of space to decide and really create something. And at the end of the day, I think that despite the game being more or less even, Porto were definitely happier at most stages of the game, just because it looks like, as much as the chances were relatively even, Porto, looking at the way that they like to play, they like to have a little bit of chaos when they're pressing. They like to have those moments when to jump and to really accelerate play and hit their opponents on the break. I think at the in the second half, when Porto created their chances for goals, it happened because Sporting were also lacking concentration. Porto, with one pass from Alan Varela, broke lines, and it looks like Sporting were always in recovery, and they didn't manage to get the ball back before De Jong put it back in the net. And as much as William Gomes, it was a moment of inspiration. It's a moment where he had two players theoretically on top of him, but he was able to cut inside and do something that he's already done this season against Casapia. It's a lack of concentration at the end of the day. And Porto, in their moments where they managed to build up with a bigger threat at the end of the day, I think that's when De Jong managed to draw Inacio out. He was kind of a backboard, and he was laying off passes left, right, and centre. And it was a clear pattern of play. And that's what you want to see from the Porto manager at this stage. Porto being very comfortable with certain situations, despite being in an early stage of their season. So, as much as Sporting could have been theoretically even, in reality, Porto will be happier because obviously they got the points. But considering their moment, it's very impressive for them to come to Alvalade, a place where they've lost 2-0 in the previous two seasons, while Sporting did not look superior, and on paper, at least, given their situation in the last couple of seasons, they probably should be superior. Both pressing, where Sporting really only had superiority when Bednarek, in particular, made a couple of errors, maybe more in certain situations. But yeah, I think Porto will largely be the happier team, even just analysing the game, not even looking at the result, which obviously is the important thing at the end of the day. And I do have to look at Højbjerg at this stage, because as much as I will give him credit in a lot of things and for the start of the season, which I think a lot of Sporting issues were a little bit pessimistic about, I do question taking off Kostadinovski. As much as Højbjerg was having a good game, Kostadinovski was giving him a little bit of trouble, and bringing Pot deeper into a midfield role, considering his moment where physically he is not what he's once been, and he wasn't giving any guarantees at that latter stage of the game, in comparison to Porto, who brought in Rosario, and I don't think he did bad at all, especially when he's replacing Mora, who is a player who has special as he did, and he created Sporting a lot of problems. At the end of the day, he is a player that will solidify the midfield a little bit more. Pot is not that player. And potentially, Morita was actually missed because he is that player who calms the game down a little bit. And Sporting perhaps lacked that at stages, where Porto embraced the chaos at times in certain plays. I don't think Sporting are as comfortable in stages to do that. So, yeah, I think at the end of the day, it's not disastrous for Sporting because, look, as much as Trincão and Pote were nullified quite well, the fullbacks didn't have as much intent, and obviously, the likes of Vagianidis is coming in. Maxi Araújo will come back, and that will be a spot of improvement of itself. Farioli is early in his Porto career, and he's brought in a mentality and an aggressive nature that was lacking from Porto, that is mirroring their success of the past, perhaps with a little bit more of a maturity and not letting that get into other antics. But yeah, Farioli last season, he won four derbies. He did win the title, which is what, as a Sporting fan, I'm going to grab onto. But it's clear that he knows what is needed to win these games. He can instill that sort of composure into his team. And from a very uninspired and lethargic team last season, Porto do look very different. And barring an injury from the likes of Froholt or maybe Varela, considering their midfield depth is not the best, I think Porto is certainly going to be up there in the title race. And so is Sporting at the end of the day. It's not going to be every single game. As much as you do give a little bit more license to the wingers or the wide players, in this case, Mangas and Jenny seem to be holding the whip for Sporting. As much as you will have reinforcements, maybe Trincão will play there at times. Maybe Maxi Araújo will have a great game like he did against Benfica in the Supertaça, for example. It's not going to be all bad. Sporting have shown very promising signs. They have a very good squad. And it's going to be a very tight title race. But I think that the reason that Sporting fans will perhaps be a little bit disappointed is, one, because it seemed like it was a bit of a change in the last couple of seasons, where they managed wins where wins against Porto at home were not that common. Never mind the Dragão. The Dragão is almost a not talking point. Porto were guaranteed to get a result from there. I think it's that difference. Once again, losing at home as the two-time champions, while Porto, they had the point to prove. They have the space to make up, and it looks like they've made it up, while Sporting, and I think this is the fear of some fans, considering the transfer window, which at another time we will get into, perhaps they didn't maintain that distance. They didn't do enough in that respect. And it looks like Porto have really closed the gap, and that was a sign of intent. As much as Sporting perhaps weren't too poor, they weren't too great, and perhaps that is the mark against them, if anything.
So, you know, I wanna talk a bit more about the Højbjerg thing that you mentioned. How most of this is probably his fault, his reading of the adjustments that he has to make and maybe misreading them. The example of Pedro Gonçalves sort of having to play deeper. I wonder, you know, we've spoken about this version of Sporting's reliance on individuals. I wonder if he looks at it like that as well. You know, because he brings someone like Mangas in who. That's his guy, and that's an individual, and that's a guy who he trusts. And then he looks at someone like Pedro Gonçalves, even if he's playing deeper, it's like, oh, this is a guy that can make something happen. You know, this is a guy that'll do something. And he shouldn't be thinking like that. You should be looking at it and saying, look, we need some control in this area. We need to bring someone like Morita in. And I think that's maybe some, I hope, I mean, we'll see what happens because obviously it's still early days in the season. But if Højbjerg sort of becomes the Sporting coach that struggles in the big games and the big derbies against Benfica and against Porto, that's, I mean, that's going to get old very quickly for Sporting fans. And, you know, yeah, you know what I mean.
I
100%.
find it interesting, like, I feel like we've talked so many seasons about Pedro Gonçalves being brought back a little deeper in games or for matches, it's something that's always happened throughout his career. And I've always described Pedro Gonçalves as like a player who like I just don't think there's like a best position for him in a way. And then watching this game, and Andrew, you mentioned it about Trincão, how he's kept quite quiet, and I felt that as well. And now I'm sort of I wonder if both of them, and I come back to Amorim's system with the 3-4-3, where that's where I felt both of them are at their best. I think when Trincão's got that space to go wide on the right if he wants, it's better for him. And we're playing as a sort of almost like a ten in the central in this game. I just didn't. I feel like we didn't see the best of him. And the same with Pedro Gonçalves. I feel like when he had less defensive responsibilities, but like was slightly higher up. I don't know. I don't know if you agree, Kevin, but for me, I just feel like we're missing something in with this formation of Rui Borges. That, but maybe I'm just thinking too fondly of the past of Amorim because the players can play anywhere. But yeah, I think particularly Trincão in this game. I think when he was more central, against Port this strong Porto team, it just didn't quite feel right.
It's a very difficult dynamic to compare at this point, just because it looks like, if anything, from when Amorim was in, it's kind of flipped to now Rui in the manner that when Amorim was at Sporting, it looked like a lot of intricate play would come down the left, where Pedro Gonçalves would be involved. The likes of Maxi, Nuncens, they're a little bit more technical, even if they're not massive dribblers or anything of that sort. They can really play those quick combinations. And Jenny would be the one who'd be in acres of space. And it looked like yesterday, Jenny was very much trying to get past the likes of Zaidu or Moura. But it's a very different dynamic where you have Trincão and Pots quite close to each other at times. And it's actually on the left side where you have Mengus, who's, as much as he's made a good impact and he will be a good utility player, look, he was bought for 300,000 initial fee. And he's fourth choice if you look at all of the names in that position. But he's basic. He doesn't have a whole range of solutions when he's looking forward, when he's deciding the final pass to cross. If anything, he's better in the opposition box and attacking space, if anything. So it is a very different dynamic. And I think if what is probably most concerning is the fact that, I think at times Sporting did need a player in there who had that composure, who could bring a little bit of calm to the game, who didn't have an issue waiting for the pass, just keeping the ball at the back for a little while longer. And that is usually Diomande, who was missing, and Morita, who was missing. So I'm not going to say at any point that this is the fault of the players that Sporting were missing. As much as they are influential, Porto were missing the likes of Martin, who started the season at left back, and he is an improvement on the likes of Zaidu. They were missing Samu, who is key. As much as De Jong did a good job, at least in the first phase of build up, playing those bounce passes, that is a big miss. Gabri Veiga has started every game until now, and he has been a very good player. And obviously, in midfield, he provides a bigger balance than the likes of Mora, as much as he is a generational talent, at least in my opinion. What concerns me as a Sportingista more is really that ability to read the game and to implement that change. And I don't think Højbjerg did it in this one. I think it was clear that Sporting did look uncomfortable along the match, as much as it was broken up in phases. And to do that, Porto brought on a midfielder who was a little bit more comfortable in keeping the ball, just retaining, passing about, has a little bit more of a brain to his game, if anything. It's a bit of an unfair term to use, but I think Kosharashvili, he's always looking for that intensity for the to play at 100%, and he doesn't have that brain about him that Morita does, for example, who is just happy to keep it around him for a while and just control the match for a little while longer. And it does concern me that I think the right back position for Sporting was something that was debated before the game. Quaresma, for example, in a couple of games previous against Porto at Alvalade, had great performances. I think it's a game at Porto where he came in unexpectedly for Quach that he actually made his mark and he came back into the team. And he's obviously great. He has a great burst of energy. He can bring the ball forward. His ball playing ability is second to none. I think when you compare that to what Freixneda brings, which is a lot of insecurity with the ball, a lot of basic pass, and in terms of beating his man, he's really doesn't bring a lot to Porto, to Sporting going forward. He doesn't cause Porto any problems. And even looking at Vagnidis, who's come in two matches and provided a very good pass and really created a goal by himself, it's concerning that Højbjerg doesn't look at this and try and double down and try and recreate these sorts of characteristics, because I think it's natural when you have a player like De Bast, who, again, he's very progression first, where Diomande has that really calm presence, if anything, about him, that Farioli had the ability to see Porto's moment, see that the game was not under their control, neither with the ball nor without the ball, and it was a very divided game. He brought in a player who provides a bit of balance. Sporting weren't able to do that. They brought in just another couple of attacking players, and look, what happens, happens. And I think that's probably the difference in the managers, one who's managed at the top level already, and Hoiberg, who does still seem to be adapting. As much as Sporting have improved from last season to this one in terms of their performances, and obviously there are external factors like less injuries at this point, perhaps better conditioning, Hoiberg hasn't been able to do that in this game. And look, as much as I will applaud him for being unbeaten in the league until this point, this is the first defeat. They did only beat Benfica in the Taça de Portugal with a last-minute goal, which was a mistake from Renato Sanches. The earlier derbies, they were either draws or very, very basic wins where it was an early goal and they were holding on for the rest of the game, or matches like these ones where there is an eventual loss. And the performances in neither of these games, any of these, against Benfica and Porto, were largely convincing. So I think that is probably where a lot of the doubts will lie, whether in the next one, Hoiberg can get that win and a convincing one. Because if it's not against Porto at the start of Farioli's reign, and you can only assume that they're going to get better, and it didn't happen against a Benfica who's heavily questionable at this point, where the starting 11 doesn't seem to be defined and Bruno Lage does not look 100% certain in his place, I'm not 100% sure when it's going to happen, because Sporting do not have the best records against these sides naturally in the past. And the stature of both Benfica and Porto, as much as Sporting are changing the narrative, will still be superior. So it will be very difficult, or it will be very interesting to see in the near future what happens in the next game.
Yeah, and I know it might even perhaps for some people listening sound slightly harsh to talk about a manager's record after only basically one big game in the league. But as we all know, and anyone who follows the league knows, leagues are decided on these games. You know, there's not a lot of tough games for these top clubs. They're so important. Of course, there can be slip ups along the way, dropped points here and there against smaller clubs. But ultimately, these big clasicos are where the title race swings backwards and forwards. So it's a huge moment in the league already after just four games. And I think it is right to kind of point out that the game management between the two managers, I thought, was probably what made the difference. Andrew, one thing that I also think is worth elaborating on is the kind of the players that came into this Porto side and who made an impact, because maybe at times earlier in the season we were worried a little bit about the squad depth, about whether there would be players capable of coming off the bench and making an impact. But in this game, something that stood out for me was the players that came in that didn't start the season, the likes of Mora at left back, and of course Rodrigo Mora in the attacking midfield position, William Gomes on the wing, of course, and even the new defensive midfielder Rosario, who made a good impact. How many of these players do you think are going to be causing kind of headaches for Farioli in a good way, maybe making him question how the team's going to play, whether he who how to. Maybe he's got a few more options now, because I feel like Rodrigo Mora particularly, I felt like made an impact in only the way that he can, because he's a very unique player to come into that midfield.
I think Farioli's, like most good managers, they can be quite stubborn, and I think he will want his players to do the stuff that he wants them to do out of possession as well, because that's very important. And I just think Gabri Veiga sort of follows that more than Rodrigo Moura will. As exciting as Rodrigo Moura is, he's a young player, and I think out of possession, he's a young attacking player. He doesn't really want to do the work, and maybe he doesn't follow the instructions maybe as closely, and that's why we haven't seen him play that much this season. As for Francisco Moura, if it's between Francisco Moura and Zaidu, we can guess who's going to start. But then I think once Martin Fernandes comes back, it'll be a bit different. So that's really good to have three options in that position, especially fullback positions, which we've had problems with in the past. Pablo Rosario, that's an interesting one, because he did look good in his short sort of stint on the field in that game. I don't know how that's going to work. I don't know where he's going to play. It's going to be interesting to see how he uses him and whether or not he finds a place in this team, because that midfield is pretty set and they work really well. And I don't think you want to be disrupting that at this point.
Yeah, and the Rosario signing was quite interesting when he joined because I wasn't sitting around thinking that Porto, the priority was another defensive midfielder, obviously, with
Yeah,
Alan Varela. And
same.
then you think, well, maybe it gives Ferreira the option to play with a 4-2-3-1, but then where does that leave Froholt? Because I don't think he's necessarily like a 10, or maybe he could do it, of course. And maybe that's when Rodrigo Moura played. But of course, these options are all important. And it's not just about positions, it's about mentality and having winners and players in your squad that you can trust. Maybe he doesn't trust Eustaquio as much as he might trust Alan Varela and Rosario. So, you know, these are all considerations. But I feel like we're kind of naturally come to the end of this section. And I think just to end off, I think the most important kind of aspect of the game to reiterate for me was just about the mindset of the players, because that for me was really where the game was won. We can talk about individual quality, we can talk about the standards of the starting 11s, but I think we established that this was a very even game in many ways. And I think for me, looking at Porto in this game, the most impressive thing was that this team does not underestimate itself. They might have been underestimated by a lot of people, perhaps. They might have been underestimated by Benfica and Sporting, by people who are still thinking of Porto from last season. But I think it was a real statement win and a real statement performance. And I think it really does kind of blow open the title race for the season. And I am saying that after only 4 games, but it feels like it's going to be a very exciting title race as the season goes on.
Oh, but can I just say it? I watched this on Thriller TV, and I know a friend of the podcast, Cobb Murphy on comms, but it was, I just, I, every time, it's just so good, man. Like, I just really,
He was
I
excellent.
really, no, I really enjoyed it. It's just like, you know, I always impressed when there's one commentator, but it's just like, I really enjoyed watching the game. He just gave, like, yeah, yeah, people should listen on Thriller, watch it on Thriller TV, is what I'm trying to say.
We're also
He's a
not
great
sponsored by Trello, but we will accept a sponsorship if they wish to
guy.
get in contact.
If everyone doesn't mind, can I just end up on a bit of a more negative note? Because I didn't want to start with it,
Sure.
but it's just another word just because of those incidents, which it was on both of the goals, if anything, where things were thrown into the pitch. And even from the Porto section, there were panes of glass that were broken from that away section. And look, I saw a lot of comments, at least on the Portuguese side of Twitter, maybe. A lot of the listeners will not be too familiar with it. I think it's just really sad when the players, for once, which in the last few years, it's not been that easy, if anything, to keep the football talking and not have the incident itself be masked or really tarnished by the players themselves. The one time that that happens, it seems like the fans took it into their own hands. And I think it's a real shame that, one, we can't just say that both sides, certain individuals, because they do not speak for the whole fan base, they really did do something which is not right. And it's a real shame that we can't just say that that was bad without trying to compare and say, oh, but they did that and they did that. Let's just be human. Let's have a bit of common sense and let's keep it very clear that, yeah, that did happen. Both sides, certain individuals were wrong. And happily, that there was a football game that was probably one of the best that we've had in the last years, looking at Sporting Porto, and that spoke higher than those sorts of events because it's not that often. And despite, obviously, I'm not that happy at the victory of this game, but happily there was a very good game, and we've spent a very long time analysing it because it was really that good, and there was that amount of quality on show. So yeah. I want on one side quite a negative thing to say, and unfortunately, it did happen. Fortunately, it is not that common for the fans to be the protagonists of that so those sorts of episodes. And happily, it was a very, very good game, and that spoke higher.
Yeah, very well said. Very well said. It was indeed, I think, one of the best Clasicos we've had in a long time. And we enjoyed it very much. We look forward to the next one. I'm not sure when it will be, but yeah, it's just given me
Revenge.
a taste for the title race, really, which I think is what, you know, what this league's all about. But gentlemen, let's move on and talk about some other football from around the league. We're going to whiz through a few games. Let's start with another important win for Benfica, who only sit adrift from the top of the table through during due to playing less games than their opponents, they beat Alverca 2-1 away from home. Another fairly comfortable result, made a little bit trickier by a red card for Amar Dedic towards the end of the second half. It allowed Alverca a little bit more influence on the game, and indeed get a goal against Benfica. But those two first half goals from Schladerup and Dedic were enough to see to them secure 3 points. My question, though, guys, is about squad selection, which I found quite interesting. I don't think at the beginning of the season we would have expected to see Pavlidis and Trubin both on the bench, but that's where we are. And I think we are seeing Benfica starting to flesh out their squad somewhat with a few new additions. So yeah, maybe Benfica have identified the issues that we've said they've had for a while, and are addressing it. But I think it was quite telling in this game that once again, they relied on goals coming from slightly strange places. A great solo goal from a right back, and then a goal from a winger who I don't think is perhaps the first name on the team sheet by any means. But yeah, I don't know, Andrew, I'll come to you first. I don't know if you had any thoughts on the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think Benfica's sort of offensive bluntness continues. They only generated two clear-cut shots on target, which is quite damning for a team like Benfica playing against a newly promoted Alverca team. One was the lucky touch to find Schildrup, like you said, and then the other one was the great solo effort. And then Dedic gets himself sent off. I wonder how they're going to cope without him because they rely on him quite a lot offensively because they do so little work in creating chances already. And to lose your sort of fullback that's been doing that, that's going to suck. Yeah, I think starting Ivanovic over Pavlidis in this game, when you're struggling to create chances, I would trust Pavlidis to sort of make something happen more than Ivanovic just because Ivanovic hasn't been here long enough. We don't know enough about him. So that was a bit bizarre. Sheldrup had a good game. He's improving steadily. He probably just needs a steady stream of games because it seems to be helping him a bit. He's still kind of not, a guy I would trust really to really be in this team. But looks like they're going to use him going forward. Right wing continues to be an issue. They've brought in, we know there's a sort of deadline day transfer. A right winger, Luka Biaku, has come in to resolve that issue. But for now, it was still Alzhenitsyn, and I'm also a big fan of Leandro Barreiro, but as good as he is, I can't help but wonder if when they have Luka Biaku sort of settled in the team, does Alzhenitsyn become the central midfielder? Even though he's not like an attacking midfielder, I think Laj probably trusts him more. He can contribute offensively. We've seen that he gets assists, he gets goals, so that'll be interesting to see. Excuse me. And another solid performance from Tomáš Araújo. Samuel Soares starting, you mentioned it, weird. I don't know what the idea is to sort of rotate goalkeepers. I hate goalkeeper rotation. I think
And
it's for cups
he didn't
only.
exactly fill me with loads of confidence either, I have to say.
No, he made one or two decent saves, but I think it's saves that Trubin would have easily made and most keepers would have. So I'm not sure what he's doing, if he's trying to prove a point, or I'm not sure. It's Bruno Lage, he could be doing anything with this. So I didn't think this was a great performance from Benfica. They got the win, but I again, they don't convince me at all. As for Alverca, this was a case of them not getting what they deserve. They were brave, they were positive, they created a lot of chances. I feel like they could have, if they took some of those chances, it could have been a different game. Chiquinho and Milovanovic, they made a nuisance of themselves. I thought Lincoln was good in midfield. And for all the jokes that we made about the 30 transfers, et cetera, in, they do look like they're gelling together a bit more and they seem to be playing better. So I think they'll probably be disappointed because I think they created a lot of chances. And then when that red card happens, you think, oh, we could see something here. We could see an upset, but it wasn't to be. So yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. Again, we've been speaking about this since the beginning of the season. This Benfica team, what's going on? What's the idea? The squad building's weird, the right wing, the midfield. And you bring in another striker for some reason. It doesn't make any sense.
I'm left really strongly with a feeling that I feel like Benfica need a big game because they've just been kind of coasting and
Definitely.
it's been a bit weird. I feel like they need a big game to kind of make their season like spark into life, perhaps. I mean, you know, depending on what way it goes. I mean, we've seen them. They brought in a playmaker from Ukraine, and they brought in Luka Bacchio as well, the winger. So, you know, we might see these as big improvements. And yeah, I feel like they need something to jolt their season into life, perhaps. Kev, did you also see the positivity in the Alverca performance? Because I think, you know, Andrew was right to point that out.
I think Alverca surprised me because their initial performances this season, they were very, very disjointed. It seemed like more individuals' inspiration or just very simple combinations that seemed to be giving them their bright spark, even against the likes of Braga, who, just to be very, very clear, they could have got more out of that game. Braga were very poor. Their defensive line seemed very, very poor in that match. But yeah, I think Alverca going forward, there's a lot more source of inspiration. I think that they kind of took a page out of Strela's book, where it seemed like they seemed to pack the central areas very well. Benfica once again had no inspiration going through the middle. They had to look for the likes of Dedic to have a moment of inspiration down the flanks to create anything decent. And perhaps Strela had a couple more decent shots at goal. But the game was not simple by any means for Benfica in this instance. And no games thus far. Perhaps even the European adventure, the qualification games, they've seemed a little bit more straightforward than these matches for Benfica, which is a very strange thing to say. But it looks like they do a little bit better with a little bit of space, a little bit like an opponent who goes forward a little bit more with a little bit more volume. So, yeah, I think we're left saying a lot of the same, and I'm not sure how constructive it even is at this point. Dedic was one of the strong points. Araújo brings more criteria when he's building up from the back. He's got a bigger passing range, and he can bring the ball out going forward. António Silva, as great as he is not. He doesn't have that variety to his game. Enzo is probably the better midfielder. Richard Rius, it doesn't look like he's going to have a lot of success unless he has a lot of space in front of him, which is probably product of the fact that he was playing in Brazil. That's their sort of style of play. He's going to need some patience. Sheldrup looks like he's heating up a little bit. Again, I'm not sure until what point he is a winger who brings something a little bit different. It looks like Benfica only have wingers who have that sort of relationship with the shot. It doesn't look like they're creators per se. Perhaps. And from what I've seen of Sudakov, he's more of that player, more of a central player. Luka Bakio, he looks like just a replacement for Aktürkoğlu. So it doesn't look like they've brought a lot different in. I have to agree with Andrew. I do not understand bringing Ivanovic in to play as a low nine. Pavlidis, he drops back a lot more often. He can create chances by himself, bring the ball forward, even take on a man with some sort of ease. Ivanovic, he looks a little bit more similar to Gyökeres in a way that he kind of charges with the ball if he has that opportunity. But other than that, he's not the most technically gifted. He's not as intricate as Pavlidis is. So I wouldn't really understand that option because against the low blocks, you do need those sorts of intricate players. And other than that, I think it's a lot more of the same. Alverca, where they had their points of inspiration, was showing that they were moderately well organized. They clearly studied Benfica, and Benfica do not bring a whole lot of variety to their game. So they were managed to keep them relatively quiet. As Andrew said, the shots on goal were very, very minimal, and that is a concern. When Alverca is having more shots than Benfica, something is not right. That should not be happening. Even if Benfica are away, even if Benfica aren't in their best moment, Alverca have just got promoted. They made 175 signings, it seems. That's just unexplainable. It's inadmissible, really. And for Alverca, I think it's a little bit more of the same again. A couple of moments of inspiration where they show that with time, with patience, something could come with this. With Lincoln in the side, I think they've got a new lease of life because as good as Chiquinho has been as creating by himself, Lincoln is that sort of player who can bring a little bit more criteria in the final third. A little bit more quality in his pass, in his shot. And other than that, probably the player that I want to really bring to the forefront is Amorim, because I think he's quite a decent midfielder. He seems a little bit above the general level of Alverca. And other than that, it is a point of looking to the bench. They did bring on Chisumba, Lincoln, Stiv, players who have played at a slightly higher level, and they've got a lot of quality. Obviously, we're not too familiar with all the signings because there are a bucket load of them. Going forward, I don't think it's all bad. I've seen a little bit more inspiration from them than I've seen for the likes of Kazapia. I'm so sorry, Barney, and the likes of Avies. So, look, I'm not going to say it was an amazing
Couldn't
performance from
resist a
Alverca.
little dig. Couldn't resist a
You
little
have
dig.
to. I'm not liking him this season at all. Look,
No.
I'll even bring Tondela, who, as much as I do have some kind words for them, haven't got the results. Santa Clara, haven't got the results. Estoril, maybe a little bit shakier than we would have been expecting. So, look, all things considered, considering it, they did receive Benfica. At the end of the day, the budgets, it's not even a comparison, all of that. I think Alverca can be relatively pleased with some things that they saw in that game, bearing in mind that they do have players to bring into the side. They are still gelling. And for Benfica, well, I hope for their sake that Sudakov brings a little bit of what they're lacking, because it doesn't look like Luka Bacu is that player. And other than that, it's a lot more of the same. And that is not going to be enough against the Porto side that we saw at the Alvalade, or Sporting that we saw mostly in the first couple of games.
Well, I'm glad you guys saw some positivity in Alverca, because I was left with the feeling that if they were to go down, they would have painted all those seats for nothing. It would have been such a shame. But no, they do seem to be improving and gelling somewhat, which is very good to see.
Can I just end about before we move on about Benfica? And I just wanted to mention Florentino, who's just moved to Burnley, just because I've always really liked him. I think he's a really good player, and I feel like, we've had very similar conversations about Benfica's midfield for the past few seasons, and he was a sort of part of that. But the reason I wanted to highlight him is just because I was just thinking about him in Europe, and I feel like he was so good in the Champions League, and I feel like Benfica are going to miss him. I think I'm just worried. I feel like there hasn't been much of a fan, like an uproar about him going, like, and nor should there, because in the league he was never really that effective, right? But I think I've always liked him as a player. I think he's great defensively, and I think in Europe he was so good. And I think for them to have lost him, and the importance of Europe for these teams, as it always is, I'm just a little bit worried about it. And I think it's a good move for him as a player. I wonder if Benfica fans feel as disappointed as I am to see him go, or if they're quite relieved. I just think he's an interesting player, and I keep coming back to this thing of, like, I feel like he was quite key to their success in Europe in the past few seasons, and he seems like a shame to lose him.
I
No, I
think
disagree.
Florence. Yeah, I was about to disagree as
Thank you, Andrew.
well. Kevin, you go for it, and I'll tell you my point after.
I'll just say this. With Manuel Silva in the side, with Enzo, who's made a bit of a breakthrough, considering you have two midfielders who can press really well in both Barreiro and Alcrum, who seems a bit of a Swiss Army knife, I do not see the need for a player who, from when he made his debut for the side and when he was making a real impact in his first season, almost probably about 5 years ago now, I do not see the need for Florentino. And for that fee, I think it's great business. And Andrew, I think you can get more into the player he is.
Yeah, that's exactly what
Isn't.
I was gonna say. I think he's much better in a team that doesn't dominate possession. I think that's why you saw the best of him in Europe, when they were playing teams that were sort of better, you could say. And when you're in the league, you're dominating possession. Most of the time Benfica will dominate possession, and that's why we just didn't see the best of him. I think Burnley in the Premier League is probably the right move, because they're not gonna dominate possession this season. Maybe depending if they stay up or go down, he might dominate possession next season, and we'll see what he's about. But I think it's a good move for a player that had limitations. He was, I guess, good for the team, but that midfield is so sort of stacked, and the upgrade is so great that I think he's going to really struggle for game time.
I think that was the sort of point I was trying to make, really, was that, like, seeing him in Europe, he was great. But obviously, as you both said, in this league, you don't need a player like that. And so that's the juxtaposition I feel with him. Like, stylistically, he's my sort of type of player I like to watch. But yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see. I'm excited to see him doing Burnley. I've always liked him as a player. Yeah.
Are we aware that he's 26? I had the idea he was still about 24.
He's one of
He's
those
going
players
into
who's
his
been
prime.
22 forever.
Wow.
The other thing I didn't realize, because I did watch the news that he'd signed for some reason on Sky Sports News, and the English presenter said, Florentino Luiz, nicknamed the Octopus back in Portugal. And I did think, I don't think I've ever seen anyone use
I think that's more
that
from his academy days, to be fair. And so it is relative, like it is quite accurate. He was very much an octopus. There was a phase in his Benfica career, nothing would get by the guy. As much as he was limited in possession, he was an amazing ball winner.
It does. I'm sure there's a discussion to be had about which position on the pitch is which animal, but I think that's probably not a discussion for right now. Let's try and get through some more football chat before we run out of time. I did think it was worth at least touching on Braga's draw with Rio Ave 2-2 at Rio Ave Stadium. Perhaps that not much of a surprise result, given that Rio Ave are fast turning into the league's draw specialists. This is their third consecutive draw of the season. The interesting thing about this result from Braga's perspective was last week, where they also dropped points. We talked about them dropping points due to defensive weakness. This game, I don't think, was quite that story. I thought Rio Ave deserved the goals that they got. The issue for me was the issue for me was Braga greatly struggling to create and take chances against a Rio Ave team who seemed to be able to nullify them quite well. Andrew, I know we've been quite critical of Braga in recent weeks, but perhaps this result felt a little different. So perhaps we should be focusing more on Rio Ave's achievements rather than Braga's deficiencies.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Rio Ave didn't create a heck of a lot of chances. They were, they were just more clinical. And Rio Ave always do this every season. They go through a period where they just draw a bunch of games. This
It's very true.
is they did it last season, they did it the season before. This is and they're doing it now early in the season. Okay, fair
Getting
enough. They're
out of the
still
way, yeah.
they're still unbeaten. But they were I felt they were largely dominated by Braga, but not in a way where Braga were just all over them, but like Braga were dominating possession in that way that they do this season anyway. Clayton continues his great start to the season. He's top scorer, 5 goals. He looks really confident. He looks so comfortable every time he's on the ball. He just oozes sort of that confidence that you want in a striker. And it wasn't too long ago they were saying he might leave. It was like 3 weeks ago, there was that sort of talk. Big defensive performances, I think, from Brandon Aguilera. I think Mario Vrsa as well did very well defensively because they did do a lot of defending in this game. But they were just very clinical and they were able to hold on. And just an interesting note on Rio Ave, because I like to sort of find interesting things about games. This Rio Ave starting 11 didn't have a single Portuguese player, which is pretty rare in the Portuguese league. It was mostly sort of Greeks and a few English players. And I think this is something we'll see with Rio Ave a lot this season. This is the multi-club universe. This is what happens, right? Your players moving, wheeling and dealing all over the place. So I thought that was interesting. As for Braga, we've bashed Braga, last week, and we have kind of been bashing them a bit. I think it's another disappointing result for them, but they were a little bit better in this game for sure. There was a few better things that I saw. There's still an over-reliance on Zalazar to find their solutions in the sort of central areas. The right back position, I think, will continue to be an issue this season. Paulo Oliveira is still starting, so obviously Carlos Vicens does not listen to this podcast. But I expect Niakate to come back into the team as soon as he's fit. If Carlos Vicens has eyes, I'm sure he will do that. And then the other thing that I find curious is the second striker setup that is still happening. I wonder if that's going to be for Ricardo Horta when he comes back to sort of play in that position, because I think the two strikers is not really working. Because what I notice in this one is it turns into a 4-2-4, and then all the offensive sort of attacking has to come from Zalazar in that midfield. He's the only guy, and then Lelo. So it's all on that side of the field as well. And then you've got Zalazar shooting from 40 yards all the time. It just doesn't make sense. You need something else. So if you're going to play that, you need that second striker to play a little bit deeper and not just be next to the striker. So that was something I kind of noticed. I'm still a fan of Braga going the route they went, taking a chance on a coach. But, you know, with two unconvincing wins and a couple of draws, it doesn't really fill you with confidence going forward.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very fair point. I'm still not counting out Braga either. I don't think this will. It could still turn into a very successful season, so I won't say what I was about to say. But Kevin, I mean, just on Rio Ave, for me, I loved the performance of two players that I loved last season. I wonder if we're thinking of the same players. Cesare Mishta in the goal, I think, is a fantastic goalkeeper, and I think he made some big saves to keep the scoreline down. And man, I love Clayton. I think he's a great striker, and I love him even more on a weekly basis when I remember that he's not 33 years old and he's actually 26. And it just blows my mind. He's a great striker. I think he plays with great confidence. He a great physical presence up front. He's in the prime of his career. I know at one point there was talk about whether he would be Sporting's new striker, and I would have loved a move like that for him. But as it goes, he's at Rio Ave, and I think he's ready to make a real impact on the league this season, and I would be delighted to witness it.
Don't forget about
Clayton is
Turkey.
great.
Clayton is great. Look, Barney, you're not going to get me in trouble, or you, Albert. I'm not going to badmouth Mr. Marinakis because he's probably watching this podcast and I don't want to get dealt with his lawyers. But yeah, it seemed like because Sporting did not go for Clayton, and obviously Mr. Marinakis, as he is known, he's the owner of both Rio Ave. He's got stakes in Nottingham Forest. Perhaps that influenced the Jota Silva deal that did not go through. Yeah, Clayton, as of himself, he is a great player. He does warrant those links to all of the big three, because at one point, a striker could have been used for all three of them, even if not the starting striker. And he has been quoted as being happy to prove his worth against the likes of Gyökeres when he was there, Pavlidis and Samuel. Look, he's unbelievably complete for the level. You don't expect Rio Ave, as great as a club they may be, you don't expect them to have such a complete striker. His physical presence, but also his technical ability is very underrated. He can create shooting opportunities himself. He can shoot decently with both feet and create a lot of power. And even just surprise the goalkeeper. The amount of times that he wrong foots the goalkeeper is very impressive. He's that sort of goalkeeper or that sort of striker who it's a luxury for that sort of club because any sort of situation, he seems to bring this play forward. Even if he's extremely isolated, he has the physical ability to battle to then bring others into play. So even if Rio Ave aren't the most exciting side, don't have the best conditions, Clayton will always bring them one step closer to victory. And perhaps it is a bit of a waste for him being at a club that doesn't have a whole lot around him. I'm not very impressed by this Rio Ave side. They are moderately difficult to beat, but at the same time, I think Braga does have their blame to take in this game. It's very clear they are looking for inspiration. I'll even extend this to three players. Clayton at the front. André Luiz did look very good in this game. And naturally, he does seem to have quite a good partnership with Clayton. Kind of a situation where they bounce off each other and they can bring the ball forward just as in individual plays. And obviously, Mishta, he was one of the best goalkeepers last season. He's carrying on in that sort of form. Other than that, I don't see a whole lot of inspiration in this Kiwav side. Banzel doesn't look all bad to me. Aguilera doesn't look all bad. Neither does Kuzai, but it's a far shout from the likes of Guga, Fabio Ronaldo, even in past seasons. It looks like Petit, wherever he goes, he had that sort of situation where it's kind of a stopgap. And now Sotiris has come into place, and it doesn't look like he's been given a whole lot more of conditions. João Vaz perhaps gives a little bit more quality of pass, but I'm not too sure what his physical ability is at this stage. Yeah, I'm not too excited for this Kuwait season. It does smell like that typical like 12th place, 13th place, perhaps. Perhaps not drawn into a massive relegation battle because of the star quality they've got. But yeah, not overly impressive. Whereas Braga, I don't think they created Rio Ave enough problems. I think that their rest defense is very poor. The high line with the likes of Paulo Oliveira, I said it last week, I'll say it this week, it doesn't make sense. It does create a lot of possibility does offer Chiwav a chance to have a few loose breaks and really gain their confidence just based off that. And really, other than the likes of Moutinho, who's a lighthouse either way, he pulls the strings in midfield every single time. Jorge Fernandes, who really is the inspiration of this side. Leilu, who's been the inspiration down the left-hand side, if anything. I think that Braga have been very, very dependent on Zalazar. And I think in this game especially, you do need to permit him a little bit more freedom to come more inside, not have him too stuck to the left-hand side where he has been playing a little bit more often in Europe. I think if you permit him to have a free role, the likes of Trincão even have, you could have a few more results and not have him really shooting from 35 yards, where he does seem he gets a little bit frustrated through the lack of options. And yeah, I'd have to agree with that centre forward, even partnership, really didn't cause Chiwave enough problems, especially not a back three where it looks like they weren't even occupied a lot of the time because they're two strikers who seem quite selfless. Navarro likes to drop quite a lot. Paul Victor, he was making runs, but he wasn't necessarily looking for the ball. It looked like more beneficial for his counterparts. So, yeah, he's a strange one. At the same time, I can give Chiwave a lot of merit for the fact that at the end of the day, Braga, they didn't get more than the two goals that they got and they managed to match them. Look, the result is what matters at the end of the day. You are relatively hard to beat if you get three draws in your first three games. But at the same time, I think there's a lot of lack of merit from Braga, who, as much as they caused some problems, did they warrant more than those two goals? Did they bring in players who offered a real alternative? They made three changes. Elwazani got a goal. I'm not too sure how much was really his own merit. And yeah, I look at that bench. Moscardo, a lot of promise. Apparently, I've not seen too much from him. Gabri, he's not been too consistent. And other than that, he's a lot of academy products and defensive talent, if anything. So yeah. It's a Braga continues to be a bit of a strange one. They show some good signs, but it looks like it's not all there. And as for Chiwave, yeah, I'm not 100% convinced. I think they'll be plucky at times. They'll be difficult to beat because they do have star quality, but as an overall package, it's not the most impressive. It's not the best that we've seen from them.
Maybe Riav could surprise everyone and go on the longest drawing streak of in the history of the Premier League just by being always
Oh
that
yeah,
team that's.
I did do one for Portugal earlier on, which was the E in Chiwave stands for empate, which is draw in English. So you can get left with that one.
We'll see. Maybe they can keep the streak running. I would very, if we can, gentlemen, very quickly like to touch on two more games before we go because I feel like there was a couple of interesting results. Tondela drawing 2-2 with Estoril, a game which arguably Tondela should have won, but then equally could have lost right at the very end. So a very strange game from their perspective, although they will have to settle for their first point. In their return to the Primeira Liga, they did go 1-0 down in the first half, but they got themselves back into the game via penalty in the 73rd minute. And they thought Ivan Cavalero had won the game for them, but unfortunately, it wasn't to be. Rafik Gaitán getting the equaliser, and honestly, he should have scored with that last kick to make it 3-2, and that would have been heartbreaking for Tondela. But it ended. 2-2. Two interesting teams. Maybe let's start with Tondela because I thought they're showing signs of promise, and I would very much like them to succeed as a newly promoted team. But I also have my concerns about Estoril, particularly defensively. I thought they were quite poor at the back. Again, I don't usually like to single out players, but the Boma, number 44 at the back, had a very, very poor game. Gave away the penalty and then very poor defensively for the second goal. But Andrew, they're both two interesting teams for me, Andrew, because Tondela, I think maybe we're slightly optimistic about what they can achieve coming up. But Estoril did very well last season. Towards the latter part of the season, they did start slowly, so maybe we're seeing the same again. But I think perhaps we expected a little bit more from them than what we're seeing right now.
Definitely, it's not an easy game because I think Tondela has have kind of come up and they play really positive football and they do a lot of the sort of good things on the pitch that are sometimes difficult to deal with, especially if you struggle defensively. I don't think this defensive issue is a new thing for Estoril. Ian Cathro is famed for sort of his attack-minded approach. He sets up with. It's a great philosophy to have, and it served them well last season. But some of the same defensive issues are rearing their head. They've already conceded 6 goals this season, and it seems like sometimes they rely on trying to outscore the opponent, which that's not really going to work. So I think that could be a big issue going forward for Shirul. I mean, they've got such a talented attack, players like Begraoui, players like Rafiki Eton. Good solid midfield. They've got Jordan Holzgrove, they've got Lominadze. So they have a good sort of base of players, but defensively, I don't know if it's just the setup or maybe they need better players. I think there needs to be more focus on that because they have had a bad start to the season. Yes, it is the same as last season, but everyone kind of knows a bit more about them now. Last season, at the beginning of the season, remember we having this conversation being like, oof, it's not looking good for Ian Cathro. We'll see what happens. And then, they went on that great run. I don't know if it's going to be the same this season. As for Tondela, another thoroughly entertaining game from them. They play good football, like I said. There was a few changes. Helder Tavares, who started most of the games, didn't start. Joe Hodge didn't start either. We got our first look at Ivan Cavalheiro, and he proved he can contribute. Pretty good goal. He kind of started the move in a way as well. Thiago Mansu, Yarlon Agosto. I mean, I think we've spoken about them a bit in the last few weeks anyway, but they are a good team, and there's a big game for them next week against Alverca. So that'll be very entertaining. Two teams that play pretty good football. Overall, great game. I think Estoril go away from this, obviously, a bit more worried, even though they were the away team, just because they keep conceding and they don't look as good as they did last season. As for Tondela, their first points on the board, and it's good to start getting your points on the board.
Too early to say relegation six-pointer. Who knows? We already called it a title decider this week, so maybe it's not too early. And go on, we will wrap up soon. But Barney, I know you wanted to talk about Gil Vicente and their game against Moreirense. They won 2-0 against Moreirense. I think this is a really interesting game. This was a game that back in the day we would have called our game of the week, our hipster's choice for one of the interesting games to choose to watch, Gil Vicente versus Moreirense. Two teams who I feel like are in quite a similar place. Perhaps, not the league's most eye-catching teams, but playing well, promising stuff. And both could have interesting seasons, but obviously Gil Vicente in this one, winning 2-0. But yeah, what stood out to you?
One of the reasons I wanted to highlight Gil Vicente is that it's been a couple of years now where they've pretty much struggled to, and yet there's a couple of players who are still there from that time where they were so good. Well, maybe actually no, sorry, I should say there's just one now really, and Andrew, the goalkeeper. But what I feel is perhaps looking a little bit different this year is that there are teams that do seem to have a couple of standouts now who. And the similarities to that team where it was like your friend Navarro, Samuel Lino, there's a few players that feel like they might have that quality. I'm looking at Pablo the striker in particular, who I know they signed from Famalicão, and you can maybe look at Famalicão's history of scouting players. I'm quite excited by him. He's still very young. I think this could be a good year for him. He's got a couple of goals already this season, and I just yeah, he maybe didn't kick on as much last season, but I'm quite hopeful this start is looking pretty good.
He scored an amazing solo goal, didn't he?
Yeah, and it's going to be important because I think Correa was their top goal scorer last year of 9. He's gone to, is it Lille? And then Fujimoto was their second top goal scorer, and he's gone as well. So there's going to be a need for goals. And then of course, when you've got Esteves behind him, who I think we've all talked about on this podcast already this season as a really good signing and a really good player to fill that hole for Fujimoto, and perhaps I would go as far as to say he'll probably be even more effective than Fujimoto was in the last few seasons. And at the back as well, I like Konan, who's coming at left back. They've made a few signings to address that area, and the midfield as well. Caceres, I like the look of, and I guess what the reason I wanted to talk about it, because it felt like we spoke so negatively about them for quite a while now, and
Well, they had
I'm
a poor season last year, I think. We were disappointed in them, I think, all last
and the
season,
season
really.
before that, and perhaps the
Yeah.
season like
Ever since they qualified for Europe.
yeah, essentially, but there's a team I've always liked, and it but it feels this year I'm they've put a good group of players together, and the, Morillo's come back as well. I've always liked him. He's always getting on.
Getting the band back together.
Yeah, I just I yeah I particularly Pablo for me. I don't know. There's feels something there, and he's got the potential, to if he kicks on, then who knows, they could do very well this year.
Yeah, and just looking back to those Gil Vicente in Europe days, I did see Samuelino got called up to the Brazil national team for the first time, which was pretty amazing to see. But yeah, I think that's a good place to end on a positive. And yeah, who knows? Maybe we'll see one of those two teams somewhere near the top five or six in the season. It remains to be seen. But gentlemen, I think we'll leave it there for this week. Another excellent weekend of Primeira Liga football. We've got an international break to come. But after that, we'll be back to discuss all the action from the upcoming Portuguese League football in a few weeks. But yeah, it just leaves me to say thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.